Hello and welcome to the Heads and Volleys podcast with me, Lee Dunn.
Welcome to another installment of the Volunteer Power series with San Francisco Youth Soccer. Today's guest is Damian Molinari, and I wanted to do a quick little intro because he's committed a lot of time to not only coaching, but also volunteering as a what we call a star referee within the city leagues. And a star referee is a specially trained assistant referee, and I want to give a big shout out to that program and the manager, David, too, because the program itself really helps us manage the games. It allows us to put youth referees on games. We have adults that are learning the rules and being able to officiate for us as linesmen, but then also they provide support to the volunteer referee. So I encourage you to think about that within your own program too, that every team has a trained assistant referee, and that assistant referee can step in and manage the game and referee the game if there's no referee there for whatever reason. But they also provide support to that youth referee as well as guidance the players on the field and seeing them as positive role models within the game and not necessarily just having parents on the sideline shouting or wondering why on earth a linesman made certain decisions. So there you go, everybody. The star program. Damian's a part of it, and he's also one of our volunteer coaches. So enjoy this quick interview with Damian Molinari.
Hey, Lee.
Hey, Damian, how's it going?
Good, thanks. How you doing?
Doing well, thank you. Appreciate your time.
No problem. Yeah, thanks for reaching out.
Yeah, I was pretty excited to kind of reach out, really, because I know you've been involved for a long time with coaching. So it'd be really cool to include you in this Volunteer Power series and kind of get your story out there, what you're doing and kind of why you do it, really. And I know we have a lot of coaches that really get involved with SFYS because they have to, kind of nobody else will coach, so they decide they're going to do it. And I want them to know that there's a lot of great people around with a lot of great ideas. So I figured it'd be a great one to pull.
I'm glad I could help. I do help. It does inspire some people, because I was one of those coaches where, you know, I didn't plan on coaching soccer when all this started. And I just kind of realized that if I didn't do it, that I didn't think the kids would be able to play. So I'm glad to be able to help and maybe even inspire somebody to try it out themselves.
And so how many years or seasons have you coached soccer for?
This is my, well, if we do have a season this year, it'll end up being my fourth season. I started when Nate was in second grade and I coached up. I was actually an assistant coach to start. And that's actually how I fell into it, because Nate was playing on an older team. And the guy who had coached it the previous season decided he had had enough and was thinking he didn't want to coach anymore. And this was the last game of the season. And so I scrambled to try to figure out if I had enough, people that would be interested to actually keep the team going. And so I got the team going, and then the coach decided to come back, which was great, because then it allowed me to kind of learn a little bit about coaching soccer, because it's something, like I said, I hadn't really ever thought of before. And so this will be my fourth season coaching. It'll be my third as the solo coach. You know, I grew up playing soccer through part of high school. It was never my primary sport. It's something I always enjoyed playing. And I wanted to make sure my kid and his classmates actually had some similar experiences growing up. So that's kind of how I got into it. And that first season as an assistant coach, I coached an older group of older kids that my son was on the team for. And then after that, I decided that his classmates really needed the opportunity to play. And so I decided to create a team just for him and his classmates, for his grade level classmates. And that's what I've been doing ever since then.
So you kind of get into it the same way, sort of, okay, I'll do it. I'll step up. I'll coach. So what did you, I guess kind of some of the quick learning things, I guess, from the, even that first season or first couple of games that you were in charge and even practices too, what are some of the things that kind of stand out to you from that experience?
One of the big things that took me a while to figure out was, managing a game while also managing subs and trying to make sure that everybody had a roughly equal amount of playing time. I thought I was good at kind of double tasking, and I quickly learned that it was almost impossible to do by myself. I did end up coming up with like a kind of subbing template that I relied on and set timers on my phone, and that all really helped a lot.
And then you've got kids on the sideline saying, "Coach, can I go in now? Coach, yes. Can I go in now?"
And I'm trying to check my thing and look at the game. And I'm thinking, well, just wait, just I'll take care of it. I'll let you know when it's time to go in. So that took a while. And I feel like it took me probably a season to get it down, even though I had some tools that I developed to help out with it. And I think that kind of speaks to the whole experience. There were a lot of things that I didn't really know how to do, and it just took me some time trying things out to figure out how to make it work for me and our team. And that's true with practices too. I mean, I did the training through you guys. I did, looked at a whole bunch of online stuff. And we have a team that has an extremely wide range of skills and experience with soccer. And so we have some kids that are still learning to control a ball as they dribble up field. We have another kid who is able to do like a rainbow and move to get past the defender. And so it's kind of tricky to have something that is, directly tuned into every kid's need. And so I found that it's important to be flexible, to do a little bit of skill training where it's open enough, where kids that have the skill can actually, take it to the next level, while kids who don't have the skill can start to develop it. To kind of switch things up a little bit, but have like a core set of drills that we're able to do. Because that's the other thing, I mean, just trying to explain how to do a drill to a bunch of little kids can be pretty challenging.
It looks great on paper. The X's and the O's are great.
And then the kids are like, what? Happened where I thought, oh, this is a great drill. This is going to be so amazing. And then I went to try it out and it was kind of a disaster. So that's the thing. I mean, just, being flexible when it is a disaster and recognizing, hey, this is something that I think if we can get good at it and figure it out, it will eventually be good for our team. Maybe this time it wasn't. Or other times thinking, maybe this isn't the right drill for this team. And so it's just about being flexible and trying to figure out what works best.
So do you use a lot of the same sort of practices? I know you kind of said it like a core set. Do you use the same thing? And do you find that allows the players to play more comfortably?
You mean, do I use the same kind of plans for each practice?
Yeah. So kind of the idea of there's, I experienced two different kind of schools of thought. And number one is typically a new drill every week, new practice every week, keep it fresh, keep it exciting, part of explaining and kind of the idea of almost like task mastery and trying to learn what the task is asking of the players before they actually kind of learn the underpinning things that we're trying to get for them, whether it's creating 2v1s or things like that. So then there's that idea. And then there's also an idea of saying that we'll play very, very similar type practices each session so that you already know what to expect. And that's kind of the idea of, I guess, small-sided games in practices so that they already kind of understand what's going on and then they can learn to play within that a little bit more frequently.
Yeah, I would say definitely the latter. I think especially for kids that are younger, they need that kind of routine to know what to expect, but to also be able to kind of then up their game and learn from it to take to the next level. I think if we were constantly doing new things, they wouldn't necessarily take any, take as much away from them. So, I mean, I can tell you one of the drills that really was kind of revolutionary with our team. I can't remember the name of it, but it's the one where basically we had a tennis ball, and they would throw the tennis ball. And then there were two teams, it's basically just like a soccer game. The goal is to get to like an end zone area. And they can't move when they have the ball. And so it really forces them to think about moving when they don't have the ball in their hands, because it's something they weren't doing at all. And this really helped them to see space, to start to see angles. And we did that quite a bit until it got to the point where like, all right, they're starting to get it. And then we're able to transfer that to then playing with a soccer ball. And it was probably one of the most important drills my team did, because they really then figured out how to kind of play as a team. They weren't just a single player with a ball, but they saw themselves as kind of like supports for everybody else in the team, and everybody had a place to be on the field.
Which is really interesting.
They wanted to keep playing it. They're like, let's play the tennis game. I'm like, no, we don't need to play that game anymore. Let's start developing some more of the skills, the soccer specific skills.
But it makes a good point, because there are so many, often a lot of beginner coaches or even I guess younger kid coaches in general will
want to talk about how they encourage their team to play together or to create space for each other. The idea of you hear coaches on most recreational fields yelling spread out, probably even most competitive fields too, spread out. So if you can find a way to bring that in. So clearly that's a way that's worked and it's something that's paid dividends over time. Now clearly they love the game, but it's also had its purpose too.
Yeah. And it, you know, every season I find that it's, they need a reminder. It's not something that, you know, they're going to remember to spread out at the start of the next season. We usually take at least one, I mean, we usually have one practice or two practices before our first game. And usually that first game helps me remember, oh yeah, that's right. They don't remember any of the stuff that we did last year. And so then it's about kind of rebuilding that up. And it happens a lot faster as the seasons go on. So
of course. Now, are they year-round soccer players? Or are they playing in spring and fall season, and then they do something else during the summer and the winter? Kind of, what's their makeup of soccer?
Yeah, I get the team going during spring and fall. That's about all I can commit to.
Yeah, sure. And,
you know, I wish we could play more because, like I said, I think they do lose a lot in between the seasons, and I try to encourage them to kind of go out on their own and play on their own. But they definitely lose a lot in terms of both individual skills, but also in terms of kind of playing as a team. And it's just a matter at the start of each season, kind of prioritizing which one of those things do we start with to kind of reteach.
And then for your, when you work with the players, you talked about kind of the varying skill levels that you experience. Do you set goals for individuals? Do you have like a team goal? I know you kind of said that you get to that first game and remember exactly what you kind of need to get back to catching up from the previous season. But do you outline that, and then do you involve the players in that at all? Or do you have conversations with them about what the season's going to look like?
Yeah, I definitely have conversations about that. I mean, I kind of have these like big goals for the season that aren't necessarily skill related to start with. I mean, primarily when we first started the team, I really wanted to make sure that we had a diverse group of kids. At my kids' school, they have a Spanish biliteracy program along with an English only program, and they're completely separate classes. And so first of all, I just wanted to get all the kids together that normally necessarily don't get a chance to kind of hang out and be together. And I saw soccer as a great way to start to kind of build those relationships. So that was kind of my primary thing is really about building relationships between the kids, giving them a chance to have fun and bond together. And so, you know, that's kind of my goal every season to make sure that happens. And I feel like sports offers such a great way to not just do that, but also to kind of learn how to be a good sport and to deal with challenges. And it's something that, you know, kids have challenges at practice, they have challenges during game, and those are great learning opportunities for them to help them grow into the young men that they're going to be, young and responsible men. And so I try to model that as much as possible. I try to reinforce it. And then in terms of soccer goals, I mean, it's really, you know, I start the year thinking about some of the kind of individual skills I want to focus on. And usually, like I said, those are pretty basic because we have some players that need that level, but then allow for kids to kind of get more complex if they want to. And then in terms of team play as well, I mean, like I said, usually at the start of the season, we're talking about spreading out and angles and stuff like that in position. And then what I tend to do is I start the season with that. And then as the season goes on, I kind of approach each game trying to, you know, even though you're in the moment trying to figure out subbing and all that other stuff, I'm also trying to kind of keep in my mind, what are the things that I'm seeing that we need to focus on in practice? And so, and I usually try to pick one or two big things from each game. And sometimes it's the same thing from game to game. And then just make notes about it so I can try to figure out some drills that would help us kind of work through some of those challenges that we're having in games.
Do you ask the players? Or if you have, I've done it before where I have an idea, for example, the coaching methodology of whole part whole, where we start with a scrimmage and we break into some sort of technical, tactical, small drill, if you like, 3v2, 4v3, 4v4, whatever it may be. And then we return back to playing the game. So that's kind of what the hour of the session looks like. And that middle section, I have an idea from a game or as part of our kind of plan for the month or for the week. But then I kind of trick the players too, and I ask them, and maybe you do the same thing too. It's like, what do you guys think from the game, from practices? What do you think we really need to sharpen up on? And in my head, it's already planned and I've already got it ready to go. And then I can kind of shape the conversation with them. So there's almost like they've come up with the idea that I already had, and now they kind of on board a little bit more with training. So do you involve your players in sorts of conversations like that too?
Yeah, it's interesting. I would say that in terms of planning, I try to involve them, but I don't usually get very specific things from them. I find that, and maybe it's because of the age, maybe it's because they're not as experienced with soccer. But I find that those kind of conversations are probably most useful when we're either in the middle of a scrimmage and I pause to kind of show them what was happening. And then I'll just say, okay, well, what do you guys think? What should happen here? And that gets their wheels thinking. I think especially in terms of like spacing and positioning, when you pause a game, it's a really great opportunity for them to think about, oh yeah, I could see now why I needed to be there, or I could see why being there was probably the worst place I could have been.
So. As a coach, you find yourself thinking like, why are you standing there again? You just told me 2 minutes ago that you shouldn't be there. Why are you still there?
Yeah. It takes a while for things to sink in, but it is cool to see when it starts clicking finally. So,
of course. Yeah. And so unfortunately, and this is part of the idea that we're trying to develop and grow the game more and more by providing as many, I guess, unstructured opportunities as possible, as well as the structured stuff. And I think youth soccer in the US is typically a structured sport. Very, very few players will actually go and play. And part of our school programming is to do the same thing, is to just encourage the play during school. Because if a lot of players are just playing seasonally and they're doing their team practice or practices and the game, they're playing 2 to 3 hours a week for 10 weeks. So now in an entire year, they've played 60 hours, and we can get them playing an hour a day, and suddenly everything jumps up, whether they've got practice that night or a game that day or whatever. Like we're trying to just grow the game overall. And so I wonder, what's the experience of your players outside of practices and games with you? Do they play more? I know you try and encourage them. Do they need that structured environment too? Or do you think they're starting to get into just playing more frequently?
You know, I think some of them do need the structured environment. The ones that have the kind of higher skills are generally the ones that play with family members. So, I mean, we have some parents with some amazing experience playing soccer. And you can tell they're passing a lot of that on to their kids. I kind of wish that some of those parents could get involved in coaching, because I feel like they know so much more about soccer than I do. But you can see them, that they are actually getting out there and playing with their kids, and their kids are playing with their siblings and picking a lot of stuff up that way. Yeah. And I would say that the families that are maybe less about playing soccer, they usually don't get as much unstructured play time as the other kids.
Yeah, I can see that for sure. And so you said you started as an assistant, and now you're a single coach. So no assistants for you?
Yeah, no assistants for me. I actually tried to get a dad involved. He was, I know he played some college, and he might have even played semi-pro. He's a really great player. And I tried to get involved, but he never quite finished the application process. I said, okay, fine, I'll just take it on.
I'll take it on. Yeah, thanks a lot. I always hear mixed reviews about assistant coaches, and I've run coach education classes where someone will say, I'm an assistant and I pick up cones. And then I hear other guys who say, I'm an assistant and I take the other half. For example, you're coaching a small-sided game in practice. The head coach is worried about the attacking team and scoring more goals. And so they use the assistant to help coach the defenders to stop the attackers. And so they have kind of a good balance going on, where they almost coach a team each within the practice. So I wonder, that brief experience you had as an assistant, what did you do in that time? What was your role? Were you kind of leading parts of the practice, or how did it work for you?
Yeah, it's kind of the latter part of what you said. And that's what I was hoping to do with this other parent. In fact, I mean, like I said, having multiple parents, I think would be amazing coaches. But it would be like one person would be coaching defense while the other person would be coaching offense in some drills. In a scrimmage, a lot of times we'd have one on each side of the field just to kind of be coaching whatever was happening on that side of the field. Mm-hmm. There were times where we had kind of stations, and kids would rotate through the different stations, and we'd have a different coach at each station. So
yeah, sure.
You know, it makes life a lot easier, and would be so much better for the kids if we did have more than one coach.
Yeah, Now, how is it coaching your own kid too? Do you find that a challenge? Do you find it rewarding? Kind of where are you at on coaching your own child?
A little bit of both. I mean, we've had our growing pains. I had to have multiple conversations with him. He tends to be the loudest kid on the field. He yells. He's very loud, and he understands a lot of sports in general more than other kids his age. Okay. And so that applies to soccer as well. And so he's great on the field because he knows what should be happening and can direct people, but he also can tend to yell or, criticize, and that extends to me as well. He thinks he knows sometimes better than me or gets upset at things that I do. I think because I'm his dad and, you know, there are times where I make a call that he doesn't agree with, and he kind of feels safe enough, I guess, to yell at me about some of those calls. And so we've had, you know, in a way, it was very challenging at times, but at the same time, I feel like our relationship has gotten stronger because it's led to, you know, really great conversations about how to respond when you don't agree with a call, or even like, even though I'm your dad, as your coach, you can't talk to me. but, you know, but we had, you know, really long, great conversations about sportsmanship. And I think it was probably more likely that that would happen because I was his dad. You know,
yeah, sure.
I have conversations with all the kids about it, but none as long or as deep as the ones I have with him. So even though at times it's been challenging, it also has been really rewarding, and I think led to a much stronger relationship between us.
It's awesome. And I think about the car ride after games is one of a player's typical hate, because they get in the car with their parents and their parents are like, what were you doing? What is the team doing? What is the coach doing? What is this guy doing? What on earth is going on? And so even with the players that I coach, we actually use this kind of quarantine time to build like a team manual. And part of it was the after the game or in the car conversations after practice and after games. And so the players decided that they would only talk to their parents about the soccer that they had just done, whether that was training or a game, if their parents could ask them questions about what we were doing. And in terms of, we have like a specific plan and what we call a game model. So this is the model that we follow. Our team should try to play the same way as much as possible. And there are different expectations within different parts of the field from different players. And when parents will say, like, why were you doing that? The kids have decided that they're not going to have that conversation with them. So it's part of their plan to, or their part of their expectation is to educate their parents on what they're doing. So when the kids get in the car after a game or after practice, and the first question is, how was it? The kids always say, good. It was good. And then that's kind of end of the conversation. And that's all the parents ever really know. So part of my drive has been to help educate them, but then also expect the players to tell the parents, we were working on this. And this is why. So it keeps me accountable that we have this model that we follow, and I can't just go on a whim and decide we're going to suddenly try and do something different. But then they have control over the conversation, and they can say, we were doing this. And then the parents say, well, did it work? Or I didn't see it working. And now the conversation is a much more structured conversation, as opposed to, your coach is a fool. What's he doing out there? Who knows? And then you see that kid has a different attitude towards you because they think their parents don't like you, so they don't like you. And so I wonder, that conversation with your son after games, you have like as a team, like, oh, we could have done this. You almost like bounce ideas off him as like an assistant. Or does he treat you like an assistant?
Yeah, in some ways I do. I think, you know, just a lot of times he'll be, what I found is that he's quicker to kind of criticize other players. And so I try to kind of put the emphasis back on, well, what was our game plan? What did we do? What did we do well? And what did that person do well? And how can we as a team be better? Because it's not really about like singling out a single person, but what did we do as a team and what do we need to do? What do you think we need to do at practice? He loves having those conversations to think about like, how does what we did today mean in terms of what we need to focus on for our next practice?
And that's an awesome conversation. It's exactly what I'm trying to build with my players and trying to share the idea for as many people who are listening to this or watching this and help them see, like, the more you empower your players, the more you bring them into the fold, the more you give them a voice, it's going to help their understanding. It's going to help you because you might miss something. You might turn around and say, why are you playing him in goal? Like, that's a very good question. I don't know. And then suddenly everything's in question, but these players, now we give them a voice. So yeah. as we talk about new coaches coming into the fold and people kind of taking on the coaching roles, do you have any advice or tips or tricks or gems of knowledge that you've picked up along the way that you think everybody should know?
Yeah. Number one, I mean, it's overwhelming when you first get in and have to think about signing kids up and getting the team together and all that stuff. And I've just, every season I've really appreciated the whole SFU soccer team, because whenever I had questions, I was able to reach out and get good advice and get helpful advice. And so number one, if you're confused or not sure, reach out to you guys, because I mean, you guys really helped me get on board and figure things out. And then whenever I had problems or wasn't sure what to do, I could always pick up a phone or send an email and I'd get a pretty quick response usually. And so I think that was probably the most helpful thing getting into this. I think without that, I would have been totally lost and probably would have thrown up my hands. But I, you know, I got a lot of support from you guys. I would say, get other parents to help as much as possible, especially, so I didn't have a team manager my first season as a solo coach. And that was really challenging, having to manage everything and do all the coaching. Yeah. And I just took up too much of my time. And so really trying to find someone who can be a team manager and get them fingerprinted and cleared is really important early on, because then it'll help with a lot of the kind of paperwork and registration stuff and payments and all that. It just helps so much having another person to work with on that. You know, I said earlier, one of my biggest focuses was on getting kids together that might not have had the opportunity to play together or to get to know each other well. And a big part of that, so they're coming from, a lot of the kids in the Spanish biliteracy class come from families where parents either have limited English or don't speak English. And so being able to communicate with them in Spanish was helpful, and really reaching out, finding different ways to reach out. So I come from a world where everybody emails, but not all of my parents check their email or use email. And so I had to figure out ways to communicate where it wasn't reliant on just on sending a quick email out. So I email, I text, and I frequently send paper letters home to parents, just because I found that's the only way I can really kind of pull everybody in and give everybody that chance to play.
That's awesome.
And you know, it is worth it. It's a lot of work to kind of do all those things and communicate in all those ways, but parents do see that and appreciate it. And, you know, they're willing to then step in and really make sure their kids are able to play. And then other stuff, I mean, you talked a little bit about kind of having plans for practices. I would say that is really important, and do what's most comfortable for you, and be flexible. You know, there were times when I might have the best plan, what I thought would be the best plans, it'd be a disaster. And so I'd have to be flexible enough to kind of modify things and change it and say, okay, let's scrimmage instead. And then there were days when it was, you know, 90 degrees out and kids in SF melt when it's 90 degrees out. So I'd have to figure out ways to kind of keep it fun and energizing, because otherwise they'd end up really upset at me and at each other because they were so hot. And I think it's a balance of having a good plan, but also being really flexible. And then kind of figuring out like systems for stuff. So, you know, it's good to have a consistent structure for practices. I think it helps the kids. I think it makes it easier on the coach. And it's good to, you know, figure out a system, like I said, for even just figuring out substitutes, maybe have a template where you can make sure that kids are getting roughly equal time and maybe trying different positions out. So I think that's it. I do want to, you know, I want to thank you guys, because like I said, you guys have been such a huge support. And I always really appreciate every year, even just trying to get some of the kids signed up that don't have technology access. You guys are always really helpful with that. So I want to appreciate you guys for that.
Absolutely. And it's about getting kids on the field and supporting and empowering the volunteers that make the game happen. So I want to thank you, Damien, for the work that you do, and the overall message I think I'm picking up for the most part is planning. It's planning. It's whether the plan comes to fruition or not, that you've got something there that is done with purpose, and there's an intention behind, whether that's including everybody or just updating everyone in the various ways that it takes to communicate with the variety of people that are involved in the team. So I think a huge thank you to you for making soccer possible for so many more children that probably might be missing out otherwise. So I want to thank you. I want to thank you for your time on this, Damien, too. I'm really excited for people just to hear just how it's a slippery slope, I think, for volunteering in youth sport, and soccer is especially the same, where I'll help out, I'll volunteer a little bit. Yeah, I'll give you a couple of hours, and then sure enough, got your head on the table as you're writing plans out and wondering how you get more kids on the field playing, and how you deal with, Dad, that's not right, he shouldn't be in goal anymore, or whatever else comes out. So yeah. Huge thank you. And for anybody listening and watching, that this is just, it's the same message that we hear in this Volunteer Power series of, it's empowering the players, it's getting the players on the field, it's giving them the opportunities, and it's soccer, but there's also, like you said, it's mixing with new children and new players, and yeah. exploring new parts of the city and being challenged in completely new ways. So again, a huge thank you to you.
No problem, it was my pleasure. It was a lot of fun to talk to you. And it's a really challenging thing, and the payoff is huge. So I'm really glad I took this step, and I hope other people think about doing that as well.